three lives and three deaths. This week it happened that my number was up, and I was called for jury service downtown Los Angeles. And a judge came in and explained, of course, I was called on my fifth day, my last day of vulnerability. And the judge said, if you have something to do next week, if you want to gamble, go to Vegas. If you think you're going to be dismissed, don't take a chance if you have something important. I have something important, so I went and I postponed my jury service and walked over to the cathedral in downtown Los Angeles where they were going to have the service for the Pope just hours before he died. It's the first time I've been in that cathedral, and its sacred space is something remarkable. I love sacred space. I love that we meet in here with these windows and this glass as opposed to downstairs or in the social hall where we used to meet. I used to love when I was in Vienna going to Stephanstom, to St. Stephen's, and sitting in the cold and dark cathedral and felt it illuminated by the lights of candles and the rafters. They don't actually have rafters, but the marble coming alive with the organ music and the concerts that would happen once a week. There's something about that space that is uplifting and that takes us to another space in our own minds and in our own hearts. So I sat there and, I don't know, prayed, meditated, contemplated, thought. Any word is really all right with me. About this Pope and his life and his legacy and all of the things that I found inspirational and admirable and all of the things that that I didn't agree with, and about the kind of legacies that we build with our lives, with what we do and what we don't do, with the positions that we take and the positions we fear to take. I used to play a game with a friend a long time ago. We tried to come up with the most unlikely three people to appear at the same time on the cover of Time magazine. You try to pick people that had absolutely no relationship with one another. And I think that one of the winners, and if not the winners, at least a finalist we came up with was Sonny Liston, Mao Zedong, and Albert Einstein. And I thought that was a good combination because they didn't really seem to operate in the same areas. But as I thought about that, in fact, you can make a connection. You can make a connection in terms of physical power for Sonny Liston and political power for Mao Zedong and intellectual power for Albert Einstein. There are links in this world that connect us in ways that we can't really imagine. If I were putting together the cover of the magazine of this week, it would be three lives and three deaths. Terry Schiavo, Johnny Cochran, and the Pope. Wouldn't seem to have a lot in common other than the time of their deaths and how these deaths have impacted the American public and, in the Pope's case, the world during this past week and these past weeks. I think that there are, in fact, some thematic connections about what kind of legacies we create and we leave, and if, in fact, we can know them as they're happening. Terri Schiavo's legacy began, her public legacy began the day that she collapsed and went into what was eventually close enough to brain death, into that limbo, never land of hovering between physical life and spiritual life. Her legacy publicly will clearly be the beginnings of a conversation, tragically, I suspect, a conflict within our society, but importantly, a conversation about what it means to live and what it means to die. The legacy to her family, how she lived when she was fully in herself, is something that we know very little about. So she has a private legacy to her husband, to her parents, to her family. She has this public legacy from her death and dying to a larger public that owns it. And that, in a sense, her legacy is still going on and it is still being written, though not by her. It's being written by us. It's being written by all of us who will get up and write an advance directive and think about the conditions that we want to live in and might not want to live in and who we will involve in making those decisions for us. It is a tragic and wonderful catalyst for introspection for ourselves, for communication, and for society to wrestle with the questions of what is life and what kind of technology do we involve in the maintenance of however we understand life to be. It's an ongoing legacy that begins with her death. Johnny Cochran, what a legacy. And it's a sad one, because he will be remembered by most of the white world for O.J. Simpson, and for most of the white world that thinks that he was a sly, slick trickster who got a guilty guy off by playing the race card. He was so much more than the white community knows and accepts. And however you feel about his tactics during that trial, and his position was that the police played the race card as soon as they put Mark Furman on and as soon as they did not tell the full truth about what was going on. But still, the white community has a memory of him that is fixed by that OJ, and he was an intelligent, a generous, a passionate civil rights lawyer. He was a humorous, courtly, courteous, and considerate human being. He was one of the very few lawyers, and maybe the only high-profile lawyer in the courthouse, who never acted arrogantly to court staff, whether it was another attorney or a judge or a clerk or a bailiff. He was unfailingly polite and warm and considerate. He had a whole life beyond the snapshot that the public has of him. But most of us will focus on the OJ moment, when there was so much more to the man and so much more a rich and complex life. All of which goes to the question of what do we know about each other, the people that we see in public, the people that we see in church, our public faces to each other, our private moments with our families. I think all of us have rich and complex lives, external lives, public lives, family lives, and interior lives. We leave and create complex legacies beyond what we can possibly know. Which brings me back to the cathedral and to Pope John Paul II. There is so much that he did. There's so much that he did that I was thinking about as the door to his life was closing, as I sat in the cathedral and listened to the organ music. So many doors that he opened. He opened doors of reconciliation with the Jewish community, apologizing for historic anti-Semitism and the voicelessness of the church during the Holocaust. He opened doors and tried to open doors to the Muslim community, being the first pope to go into a functioning mosque, as opposed to going into places that had been mosques that were changed into churches. And he attempted to open his doors and his arms and his heart to all different kinds of people, other Christians and other Orthodox Christians, to try to heal the rifts in humanity. That he had strong positions of his own that might not be ours is certainly true. But that he tried to bring peace where there was dissent is certainly true. That he bravely faced down an awful lot of issues in Eastern Europe with tremendous courage, that he survived the Nazis and that experience was imprinted on him. Before he was a priest, he had a girlfriend, and that girlfriend was a Jewish neighbor of his in Poland. He knew all different kinds of people, and he was a full human being, however one sees his theology and the conservatism of that theology. He did a lot for social justice in the world, and his priests and sisters did a lot for social justice all over the world, even if it wasn't always completely approved by the Pope himself. It may surprise some to know that much of family planning that went on in Latin America was done by priests and by sisters. Some of it with the Pope trying to stop it, some with his averting his eyes and knowing that it was going on. He spoke powerfully against some of the issues that of authoritarianism in the world. He faced down communism, some fascism, and went eyeball to eyeball with China. It is a remarkable and a rich legacy. And in his dying, he left another legacy, because we leave a legacy with our living and also with our dying. He didn't hide it. He didn't hide his diminishment as if age or disease or death were something unnatural and obscene to be hidden away from the world. I understand the issues of vanity. I understand the issues of I want to look my best. I understand that when I make hospital calls, there are some people that don't want to be seen in what they consider to be a diminished position. I've known actors who turned off any kinds of guests, and others who would not perform after a certain amount of time because they found their changes to be upsetting and unnatural. One of the things that the Pope really modeled was the dignity and the naturalness of disease and diminishment and dying. That we fight for life, but death is not the ultimate enemy. It is the ultimate peace. Yes, he chose where to draw the line. He said, I don't want to go to the hospital. I want to die at home. Wish Terry Schiavo had had that choice. He chose yes to the feeding tube and no to the ventilator. That was his choice. The right choice for everyone? Not necessarily, but his thoughtful choice that he had the power to see that it came true. And he modeled, I think, a tremendous dignity in coming before the public when he could not stand, when he could not speak, when he was shaking and trembling, and he said, this too is life. It's not the enemy, it is a part of if we are blessed to live long enough that we will encounter. And the very first words he said as Pope were, be not afraid. And I think that that's tremendous. And I know that running through a lot of minds here is the yes, but all that is fine, but what did he say that I don't agree with, and what didn't he say? Why could he speak against authoritarianism in government but exercise authoritarianism in the church? Why could he plead for women's rights in some cultures and not within the Catholic Church? Why did he have the stance that he had on his silence on the priestly scandals, relative silence on the priestly scandals, and the barring the door to the priesthood to women? I do not come here to balance his moral books, but to point out that we all have moral books that have two sides to them, that we all need to be asking ourselves, what are the issues that we speak out on and don't speak out on? What are our sins of omission and sins of commission? And we all have them. Every human being in our living, in our loving, in our hating, in our anger, in our generosity, creates a heritage and a legacy beyond what we can appreciate today for ourselves or in each other. Albert Einstein, as many of you know, was scandalized that he was known as the father of the atomic bomb, that it was associated with him because he never directly worked on it. He was a peace activist his entire life, speaking out for peace from the 1920s. It wasn't guilt over the bomb. It was something that was deep within him, but the public knows him for atomic energy, not for a state for Israel and a state for Palestinians in 1929 that he marched and spoke and worked for. They don't know him for all the peace work. There is a public legacy, a private legacy, an esoteric legacy, and an exoteric legacy that all of us create. We don't control it, but we create it. And it is something to be aware of as we make our choices about what we say and what we don't say, where we put our energy and where we withdraw. There are all of these lives that touch each other and multiply each other. The three lives and deaths that we recognize this week are so much more than the sum of one plus one plus one. And what we are and what we do together is so much more than the sum of our parts. The example I always like to use is of music, that when we put together 100 people singing shakily in different keys, some of us, not the mighty choir, but some of us shakily in different keys, yet we create music and harmony. We multiply our power by being in community, and that is a power for goodness. But it can also be a power to do bad things. I'm not saying it of this community, I'm saying it of any community. Because as power multiplies, it can become unchecked, and that harmony can become a mob. One of the things that our singing does, and as someone who cannot carry a tune, that I realize so well that when we join together, we act as a corrective on each other. If you take my voice, please, and I'm singing and Mitzi is not trying to do harmony and making me completely crazy, but you're on the melody, you will pull me towards the right path. That's part of the power of being together. We multiply our power to be out there in the world to make a difference, and we also gently and kindly, and in some ways automatically, correct each other. Bring each other back towards some center of the whole. Somebody can be out there doing a counterpoint. It's okay. But we act on each other in very good and healthy ways. Our lives run through each other. As the connections that are made from Sonny Liston to Mao Zedong to Albert Einstein, from Johnny Cochran to Terry Schiavo to the Pope. We are part of a rich, textured fabric of society that depends on every thread of every part in order to make something that is not monochromatic, but rich and deep and inspirational and complex. Our power, individually and together, is enormous. Not to make all our dreams come true, but to take steps towards making a more goodly world for all humankind.